King John has the day off, everybody. He'll be back at 10 a.m. next Saturday. Matt Bubala here with you for the next couple of hours. If you don't know me, I host an overnight show here, usually every Saturday morning, 2 to 5 a.m. I also fill in at various times when people take a day for vacation. For 10 years, I was John's producer here at WGN Radio. That started 20 years ago this fall, believe it or not. If you've been around with John for a long time, well, we're getting older. There's no doubt about it. Okay, so we've talked about all the other craziness all this week, and we'll get back to it. Actually, a reporter from France will be on with us a little bit later on to speak about Marine Le Pen and the headscarf issue. But right now, I want to talk about a more fun story, a more hopeful story that we heard this week. It came out that, you hear all the time about astronomers studying for habitable planets in other solar systems around the universe. But they announced this week that TRAPPIST-1, a dwarf star about 40 light years from Earth, has possibly up to 7 habitable planets orbiting right now. And scientists are studying, trying to find out more. Seth Shostak is a senior astronomer with SETI, and he joins us on the phone. Hey, Seth, how are you?
Just fine, Matt. Good to talk with you on a cold morning for you.
It is a cold morning for us. And after we had 70 degree temperatures last week, it's quite a slap in the face to be back to this. Now, let's jump right to the planets. How cold would it be on these planets? Do we know any stuff like that yet?
No, we don't, because what really counts in a situation like this are two things. One, how far are the planets from their home star, which is, by the way, a really dim bulb of a star. It's about 2,000 times dimmer than our own sun, so it's pretty weak. But these planets are very close to it. They're really star huggers. And as a consequence, the temperatures could be just as salubrious as they are in Chicago. Depends on whether they have an atmosphere. That's the second factor. And we don't know whether they have atmospheres. But if they do, it could be a nice day on some of those worlds, maybe all of those worlds.
All right. Now, how do you figure stuff like that out? It's 40 light years away. So how do you determine, I know you can determine maybe how close they are, but how do you determine whether they have water or gases or oxygen, things like that?
Yeah, well, that's very hard, actually. And the way you usually do it is you look for what are called spectral signatures. It sounds a little bit technical, but all you're doing is sort of examining the light that either bounces off these planets or, some of the light from the star will go through any atmosphere of these planets and affect the light that way. Now, if you can measure that very, very slight effect, then you might see, the presence of an atmosphere, maybe even water vapor. That would give you some indication that, maybe they have oceans. But to do that requires a big telescope, bigger than anything we've got. At the end of next year, NASA's going to launch something called the James Webb Telescope. It's an infrared telescope. It works in the infrared part of the light spectrum. But that telescope might be able to see these things. Remember, these planets are about the size of Earth. They're 40 light years away. 40 light years away is, what is that? That's, that's a couple of hundred trillion miles. That's more than I've got on my Honda.
Okay, so by just how dim the light is as this object crosses in front of its star and the immensely tiny variations on that, you determine what gases are in the atmosphere?
Well, you could in principle. What you have been able to determine, what we, the astronomers who've done this have been able to determine, is when the planet passes in front of the star gets a little bit dimmer. Not much, but a fraction of a percent, that kind of thing. But that you can measure, and that tells you how big the planet is, because if the planet's bigger, it blocks more of the light from the star. If it's smaller, it blocks less of the light from the star. That we know. But the influence of any atmosphere around that planet, that's very, very subtle. That's very, very subtle. That's like, it's like looking at a person walking across a street in downtown Chicago from a satellite photo and trying to determine, well, what color socks are they wearing? It'd be really hard. We can't do it yet.
Okay, so how close can we get with the current technology to figuring out what you've got going on these 7 planets?
Well, the only experiment that we can do right now in order to see, gosh, are these just dead, sterile worlds? Mm-hmm. Or is there, kind of a little mini federation of planets going on there? Because, there's 7 planets, and they're all about the size of the Earth. that's pretty unusual. I mean, we don't know of any other systems like that, is to do our SETI experiment, which we have. The SETI Institute has a bunch of antennas, 42 antennas in Northern California. They're all grouped together there. They're playing together like a team. And we've aimed them in the direction of this star system, TRAPPIST-1. We spent a week or two looking in its direction. We swept through a big swath of the radio dial, hoping to tune in their equivalent of WGN. But I have to say, if there are aliens there, they've been coy so far. We'll continue to listen, of course.
So if they're 40, because I'm not good with science, Dr. Shostak, this is why I turned to you. So if they're 40 light years away, how many years ago would any signal they sent had to have left their planet for us to be reading it with our telescopes right now?
Well, that's the definition of a light year. It's the distance light travels in 1 year. So, yeah, if they send a signal to us, you know, hey, we're the Klingons, we'd like to get in touch, right? It would take 40 years to get here. It's the same as the distance, 40 years, because radio waves go at the speed of light.
They do go, okay.
That's why, you know, the people in the suburbs there hear you almost the same time as the people downtown.
So only
here.
40 years. So that's but you already have the results back, and we've heard nothing from there.
Right. That's true. On the other hand, you know, Matt, what I find intriguing is you think about it. If anybody out there was listening for us, right, what could they have heard? Well, as it turns out, AM radio, they couldn't hear, lamentably perhaps, but they couldn't because AM radio tends to bounce off the atmosphere of our own planet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But beginning during the Second World War, we had things like radar and television. And that could reach them. So how long has it been since the Second World War? Well, I don't know, 72 years or something like that. So that's almost enough time for a signal to have gotten there. They pick it up. They pick up that early TV or radar from the war, and they send a message back, hey, you know, we're the inhabitants of TRAPPIST-1, and we want you to buy our used cars, or whatever they're going to send back. And that would take another 40 years to get back here. So that's 80 years in total, and that's almost the amount of time since the Second World War. So I'm thinking maybe we ought to, you know, kind of intensify our listening efforts.
So, boy, it's interesting because you say that they'd send a message back, but if they were sending messages at all, if they had anything like radar or television signals, you would have picked that up, right?
We could have, but I have to say that television, even irrespective of what influence you may say it has on our society, radio transmissions are not designed to be picked up by aliens. So,
right.
You know, they're not all that powerful. In fact, you know, they're getting less powerful with time because people are going to direct broadcast satellite or they got some sort of cable coming into their homes. So, and in fact, if they just had television like ours, we would not be able to pick it up. So you have to hope that either they have a deliberate transmitting project aimed our way, which might not make any sense because they haven't learned about us yet and had enough time to respond, or that in another couple of years we start getting messages, hey, you know, welcome to the Galactic Club, the dues are such and such. So, yeah, that might happen.
We're speaking with Dr. Seth Shostak from the SETI Institute, 312-981-7200. So what I want to ask him next, Stephen Hawking says we shouldn't be searching for aliens, that could turn out really bad for us. I wonder what Dr. Shostak thinks. We'll find out next on 720 WGN. Dr. Seth Shostak is on the phone with us. He's a senior astronomer at SETI. By TRAPPIST-1, a short 40-light-year drive away, they found seven possibly habitable planets. Seth, so Dr. Stephen Hawking is not big on the idea of us reaching out and contacting alien life. I know that I'm paraphrasing, but he's kind of said before that could turn out really badly for us. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, he was talking about transmitting, of course. He was saying, hey, look, don't start broadcasting messages to, I don't know, the residents of TRAPPIST-1, if there are any, because you don't know what's out there, right? They might be friendly. They might not be friendly. And if they're not friendly, maybe they would launch their interstellar battle wagons in our direction once they heard from us, because they'd know we were here, of course, and, you know, incinerate the planet or something that would really ruin your whole day. Now, but he was talking about broadcasting, and we're not doing broadcasting. We're just listening, right? So if somebody is driving into the city now and they're listening to this show, right, they don't have anything to fear from you, Matt, because you don't know that they're listening, right? You're not going to jump into their car and start giving them a hard time. So by listening, there is really no danger. But I don't even worry about the broadcasting part, because if we were to pick up a signal from these guys, you can bet somebody would grab an antenna and start, you know, sending their top 40 favorites to the inhabitants of TRAPPIST-1. the thing is, if they're advanced enough to be a threat to us, then they have big antennas, and they could pick up that radar and television we were talking about earlier. We've been broadcasting them all the time. We continue to broadcast them. O'Hare Airport radars are broadcasting.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I know some of the concern is like, oh, well, maybe they would come be hostile or whatever. Or maybe they need a planet with a lot of water, and here we are. But I would think if they had the technology and the ability to travel to other planets, then they'd find millions and billions of planets probably that have water and things like that, right? I mean, do you think we'd ever be a threat in that way that they're like, oh, we've got to go get their water, we're going to annihilate them?
Yeah, well, if they want water, there's water all over the galaxy.
Yeah.
There's water all over the cosmos. It's one of the most common compounds. Maybe it is the most common compound everywhere. We kind of know that. Look, if they want water, it's crazy. I've been on panels where we've discussed why would the aliens come here? And there's nothing we've got that they haven't got. And of course, they could save the shipping charges, right? Water is very expensive to move around because it's pretty heavy. And if they really came for the water, they'd just go to one of the moons of Jupiter. There's a lot more water there. Nobody's going to fight them for it. But when you think about what is it that we have that they don't have, there's very little except our culture and maybe our biology. Maybe they'd be interested in studying a few of us. But, you know, most likely they just come for the rock and roll.
Well, what about our planet as a whole, that this is a very habitable planet? And as much as you guys are searching, I really haven't heard once you guys say, you know what, there is like an exact replica of Earth. It's awesome. It's got four seasons and lots of oxygen and beaches of Cancun. We haven't found that planet yet. So maybe they're like, dude, let's take that planet. It's awesome.
Well, it's awesome for us. And to be honest, you could make an argument that Earth is really not as good as it could be. But but nonetheless, look, you know, if there were a planet right next door to us, and there is, call it Mars, that we could possibly, you know, inhabit, it doesn't solve a whole lot of problems for you to have a second world. That only increases the amount of space you have for building condos by a factor of two. That's hardly worth the trip. I don't think that our planet, as a planet, they say, oh, look, some real estate over there. Well, yeah, you know, there's some real estate in Tibet, too, but you're probably not buying it.
Well, what if their planet was dying or their star was about to die? Or I don't know. Come on, there's got to be some reason that somebody go, Earth looks pretty good.
Yeah. If their star is dying, maybe they look around and say, well, the nearest other world that's of any interest is 40 light years away. That's already some distance. They might say that, but you know what? Your star only dies once every many billions of years. I think it'd be really really remarkable if it happened just now. But in any case, whether it happens right now or not, we're not controlling that by listening for signals, of course.
That's true. Okay, so what's your best guess? I only have a minute left. Your best guess, if we found life on other planets, what are the odds that life is very similar to what life is like on Earth? Do you think that it would be more like our science fiction movies and fantasies, that there's all sorts of weird forms of life that could be advanced? Or do you think if we find life, there's a decent chance that it looks somewhat similar to what we have here?
Well, that's somewhat controversial. There's at least one evolutionary biologist in Cambridge in the United Kingdom in England who thinks they'd look sort of like us. I'm not sure I agree with that. All you have to do is go down to the local zoo and look around and decide how many of the inhabitants of this zoo, who, after all have DNA, and mostly DNA that's identical to yours, almost, you know, at least 80% of it is identical to yours. How many of them look like you? Not too many. Maybe in the primate section there. But, you know, the rest look like fish or snakes or giraffes or elephants or whatever. There's no reason to think that they would look very much like us. But in the movies, they do. Because,
well, the ones that are driving down the Kennedy right now and are shooting radio waves into space all look like me. So there's that.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, there's only one, you know, once apes start, hosting talk shows, then I'll say, you know what, there's probably all sorts of life that could be like this. But as of right now, what we've got to go on, there's only one type.
I think if the dinosaurs were engaged in this project, they would figure, you know, the aliens probably look like dinosaurs.
But they weren't, were they? They couldn't hack it. They couldn't take it, those dinosaurs. They were soft. They didn't have strong borders, Dr. Shostak. Seth Shostak, a senior astronomer at SETI, thank you so much for jumping on the phone. I hope we talk again soon.
Anytime, Matt.
All right, sir. Good luck for the search for life on other planets.